Welcome to Catholic Views. I'm your host, Renee Kranz. On today's show, we are going to talk to Emily Leadham, the Director of Marriage, Family, and Respect Life for the Diocese. We're going to talk about Respect Life Month. We're going to look at it a little bit differently this year. We're going to talk about thinking about pro-life as more than just anti-abortion, how the church helps mothers in crisis after their child is born, and how we can also help them. So it should be a good conversation to hear. Before we get to our interview, Dr. Chris Bergwald is in the studio for us to give us some biblical bites with Dr. B today.
I'm still looking forward to the time when you sing the jingle for that, Renee. Come on.
You have to actually come up with the proper jingle first.
Okay, fine. Yes, so we're going to be looking, we're focusing today on the gospel, but I just want to point out, because there's a common theme in a number of the readings today, and that's for a reason. So I'm going to just take a step back. Most Catholics, I don't think, realize, if you've been paying attention over the years, you may have noticed it, you may have learned it already, but typically at the Sunday reading, the first reading and the psalm and the gospel all have somehow a common theme. For this Sunday, there's reference to a vineyard, vines or vineyards that are referred to throughout. So the first reading is from Isaiah chapter 5. Psalm 80 talks about the vineyard of the Lord. And then the gospel has this parable about a landowner who planted a vineyard, put a hedge around it, dug a wine press in it, and built a tower. So that's actually pretty common. Almost every, when the lectionary, the book that has the various readings from the Bible that's read at Mass every Sunday, when the lectionary was compiled, so the schedule of readings, if you will, when the lectionary was compiled after Vatican II, there was an intentionality there where at least between the first reading and Psalm and Gospel, there'd be some sort of common theme. What's wrong with the second reading then? We've been reading Philippians lately, and we're continuing that today. What's up with the second reading? Well, the second reading is treated differently for most of the liturgical year. It's called a semi-continuous reading. So I just mentioned we're going through Philippians, and before that, I think it was 1 Corinthians. So, Renee, have you ever noticed, out of curiosity, have you ever noticed, and you may have learned this once yourself, I wouldn't be surprised, but that the second reading is, you know, week after week, it tends to be the same for several weeks in a row, but the others kind of, the Gospels are the same, but the first reading and Psalm vary. Have you noticed that?
Yeah, I have noticed that. For a while, I was really good about reading the readings every day. And I did start to notice that, hey, this is actually going in some sort of order right in the second reading. So, yeah.
Yeah. So the second reading follows. The gospel mostly follows. But the first reading, if you're like, okay, we're in Isaiah here, then we're in Genesis. It seems like we're all around, usually the Old Testament. During Easter, it's Acts of the Apostles, but it seems like it's usually all around the Old Testament. Well, that's because the scholars working on behalf of the Vatican, the biblical scholars and liturgy scholars were trying to match, and they did a pretty good job by and large, trying to match the first reading and the psalm to the theme of the gospel. So this Sunday, it's, again, the theme of a vineyard. And I just thought it might be interesting or helpful for our listeners, Renee, to think a little bit about the vineyard. So when you think, like somebody, so Jesus' parable again, there was a landowner who planted a vineyard, put a hedge around it, dug a wine press in it, and built a tower. So when you hear something like that, try to take it out of the context of the Gospels completely, if you can. Mm-hmm. So just in your imagination, what do you see, like, the landowner? Like, what would you conclude about the landowner just based on that one sentence that I just read from today's Gospel? Anything at all?
Well, it sounds like he wants to protect his investment.
Right. So he made an investment. Yeah. So if he made an investment, what does that tell us about him?
He has some confidence in what he's doing.
Right. And he probably has some money to invest, right? So
right.
Landowners, right. So it was pretty common at Jesus' time throughout the Roman Empire, where the rural parts of the Roman Empire, including Galilee, you'd have wealthy landowners. And they lived off the income of the land. So if you think of, like, in South Dakota, it'd be sort of like somebody who doesn't live on the farm, but he owns a farm, a big farm, and that's where he generates his living. So he has the foreman and the hired hands, and they're the ones who are responsible for growing the crops, harvesting the crops and everything. And then the landowner lives off of the profit from the farm. So does that make sense? Mm-hmm.
Yep, it does.
So that's exactly what's going on in this parable. So this is the parable where he leased it to tenants, goes on a journey. He sees tenants. He sends servants to the tenants to get his produce. They beat him. They kill him. They stone them. And all this stuff happens. Well, this parable is addressed to the chief priests and the elders of the people. And the message is, okay, guys, you're the tenants. You're like the foreman. You're supposed to be on my behalf, God's behalf, not Chris's, God's behalf. You're supposed to be caring for my vineyard. But you're just abusing it for its own purposes. And when I send you my representatives, the prophets, you're really abusing them. So I'm going to have to take the vineyard away from you and give it to people who will bear the fruit at the proper time. So it's pointing to the fact that Gentiles are going to be drawn into the vineyard, if you will. So sure. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does.
And I think the reason
I get it.
Good. So I want to bring this up just to wrap up. Jesus uses metaphors. He teaches with images that fit the people at the time. And certainly, I think for us as South Dakotans, knowing agriculture, this is a parable that should speak to us. We are called to be good stewards of what God has given us as well.
Thanks, Dr. B.
All right, joining me in the studio today is Emily Leadham. She is currently the Director of Marriage, Family, and Respect Life for the diocese, about to be the Executive Director of Catholic Family Services, like tomorrow.
We're in the middle of a transition here.
You're not busy or anything, right?
No, it's fine. Everything's fine.
I'm so glad you decided to join us anyway and give us a little of your time.
Absolutely. I wouldn't miss the opportunity.
So we're going to talk about Respect Life Month today, but a little different angle than we usually do. A lot of times we talk about abortion or euthanasia or whatever. We are going to talk about abortion, but we're going to talk about what happens after a child is born from a crisis pregnancy and what we do. So there are a lot of needs that mothers have when they're in that situation.
Yeah.
Can you talk about what some of the needs are that we see?
Yeah. So I would say mental, physical, and financial and emotional are kind of the categories that I would put them in. So,
okay. So
mental needs, oftentimes a woman in a crisis pregnancy might be experiencing a lot of fear, perhaps shame, perhaps depression. Maybe she is feeling terrible. And that's contributing to this, what am I going to do? Right. And so emotionally really, really struggling, mentally really struggling, maybe with depression or whatever. Physical. So the physical demands of pregnancy are big. It asks a lot of your body. It requires a lot. There's a lot of visits that happen, prenatal visits, to ensure that baby is healthy, that mom is healthy, that baby is getting the nutrition that they need, that mom is getting the nutrition that they need. So there's really, there's a lot of physical needs that moms have and some education about what that means. And then I would say, what was my last one? Emotional, because, which is kind of connected to mental, but they need community.
Yeah.
They need community. And they need to be able to, share life with other moms, with other people maybe that are in this circumstance, or maybe with people that have come out on the other side of it, which is a lot of what crisis centers focus on, is putting these women into a community of people that say, hey, you can do this. Mm-hmm. We're walking with you. We're supporting you and offering you even some of the financial assistance that you might need, or the baby clothes that you're going to need, the diapers that you're going to need. Man, diapers are expensive.
They are.
So helping with some of those things like I said, really to come alongside moms and say, you can do this.
Yeah.
We're here to walk with you.
Yeah. So, a lot of, people, some on the other side, some even on our side, the pro-life side, mm-hmm. sometimes accuse pro-lifers of being pro-birth only. Mm-hmm. So how is the church already helping women after birth? Because mm-hmm. I know we're not only pro-birth. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of things that mm-hmm. that are available. Mm-hmm. Tell us about some of those things.
So, I mean, just practically, even here in the Diocese of Sioux Falls, we have a baby closet that's stocked with thousands mm-hmm. of items, of baby items, each and every year. And every year, those thousands of baby items go out to our communities. So we have hubs throughout the diocese. So it's not just in Sioux Falls. There's one in Chamberlain.
One in Aberdeen.
One in Aberdeen. Yep. I think we have one in Brookings. I'm trying to remember where our other hubs are. Yep. And so they collect these items and they house them there so that they can get them out to the community. And then here in Sioux Falls, there's just a large need because of some of our hospital systems and that kind of thing. Obviously, the Dudley House being here. Mm-hmm. So we connect a lot with the Dudley House, with Avera. So Avera, they actually just called me and said, how can we get more items regularly? Right. Because this is such a need and we want to support these moms.
Right.
So the Teddy Bear Den is another good example of some of these ministries, these Christian ministries that do this work.
And the one you just mentioned through the diocese is our Advent baby shower.
Yeah.
So you'll see that every year where they're requesting donations and so on of baby things. That's a great program. I mean, it's just something that people can say, okay, I really need this. They don't have to pay for it. They can just come and get them.
Yep.
So it's really a neat program.
Yeah. And I know some parishes too, or Christian organizations, particularly pregnancy crisis centers that offer the ongoing support for moms as well, which I think is just absolutely beautiful and necessary so that these moms actually find a community among other women kind of in that same stage in life or going through that similar trauma, and they can find friendship. And share life's realities and the ups and downs of nursing babies at night or whatever it might be, right?
Right.
So I think the church is really offering a lot of those things as well.
Yeah. And like you said, Teddy Bear Den is not connected to the church. There's lots of programs out there that help women in that situation and just let them know they're not alone, help them with the financial needs, baby needs, whatever. So there's a lot of options out there. So how does all of this fit into the social
Catholic
social teaching.
That is a tough one.
Of the church.
You know, Renee, I was having a conversation with a friend literally the day after I submitted my Bishop's Bulletin article to you about the church being far more than pro-birth, that we really are pro-life. And I was struggling a little bit because this friend was kind of challenging me and she was saying a lot of true things that it's actually not our job to make sure that someone else's baby is fed and whatever. We actually want them to be sustainable. We actually want them to be working, contributing citizens in the workforce so that they can provide for their family, right? Like, and all of these things are true. All of these things are true. Yes. And she said this line, she said, it's not our job. And initially I was like, oh man, she's, you know, my Bishop's Bulletin article is terrible, whatever.
No, it's not.
But the more I thought about it, I thought, no, it's not our job. It's called charity.
Yes.
It's actually called charity. It's actually called love of neighbor. It's actually the pooling of resources like we hear about in the Gospels among the disciples that said, who's the most in need? And let's contribute our resources to the people that are in need out of our free will, right? Mm-hmm. Which is the freedom that we have as independent people with our own finances, our own property, our own whatever, that we can then freely actually be generous with it.
Right.
And so I think that's part of how it fits into Catholic social teaching is just this invitation to charity, which is ultimately love.
Right.
This invitation to love neighbor, to love the most in need, to love the person that is most in need of God's grace.
Yeah. Yeah.
So,
and I'm not going to say this as elegantly as you do, but if everything is not our job as far as everybody else is concerned, then there is no social teaching of the church.
No.
I mean, we can't live that if we don't understand that while we don't have to move everybody in with us and pay for everything that they need, we are expected to help each other where we can. And I think if we want to put a stop to abortion, and be able to help these women, we have to be there to do it. Mm-hmm. Can't leave them alone.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah. And it goes back to that, the accompaniment that Pope Francis has been talking about throughout his whole pontificate. How do we accompany people in this journey, mm-hmm. in this process? And one of the things that I love is a lot of the programs that I'm very drawn to are not simply handing women, couples, families, items. That's kind of what our ministry here does, mm-hmm. simply because that's what we have the capacity for.
Right.
But there's a lot of ministries that are based on reward systems. Mm-hmm. So if you are going to your prenatal appointments, if you are, you know, actively pursuing employment, if you're making good decisions, if you're avoiding drugs and alcohol, if you are this, this, and this, and this, you get certain number of points to be able then to shop in our closet,
right?
Kind of thing. So there's this education of the human person that's happening about what it means to be healthy, what right. it means to be well. And that's not a, oh, we're better than you, so here, right. learn how to do this. It's that sometimes the women coming to these spaces have never received that education.
Right.
Maybe from their parents or the people that, you know, kind of were surrounding them growing up. And so there's this parental role that's kind of entering in to say, here, I'm going to help you learn how to do this. This is what my parents taught me.
Mm-hmm.
Don't drink too much. You know,
here's how to handle your money.
Here's how to handle your money. Yeah. Yes, exactly. Yeah. Here's how to be a dad.
We have to give them the tools.
We have to give them the tools.
Yeah. And I think that's an important way to look at it.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Do you think doing these kinds of things, having these things available for women after their child is born, does that reduce abortion, do you think? It must help in them making the decision to not have an abortion.
I think it offers a witness to the world, mm-hmm. that it can be done.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's the most powerful gift of it. If they were to find themselves in an unexpected pregnancy again or something like that, maybe, maybe not. It mm-hmm. would change the outcome of that. But what I think it offers is a witness to other young women that says, wow, look at, she's doing it.
Mm-hmm.
She did it. This is going to radically change my life and it's going to be okay.
Right.
You know, and that I think is what's really, really powerful about, and what often needs to be more shared, in my view, in the pro-life movement is families that have come out on the other side of this. Mm-hmm. Because when you're in the middle of it, it feels like the most daunting thing in the world, the impassable mountain, right?
Yep.
And so I think what we need is witnesses who have gone through it that can say, it wasn't what my life plan was. It wasn't what I thought this was going to look like. And here I am. And look at this beautiful mm-hmm. child that's mm-hmm. now 5, 10, 25, mm-hmm. you know, and they've radically changed my life for the better.
Yeah. And the great thing is none of our plans usually work out exactly the way we think.
No kidding.
And hopefully many of them do turn out for the better, especially if we try to make them towards the better.
Yeah.
How does this help the pro-life cause, do you think, all of to try to put these things out there? I mean, you can try to argue with someone on social media and maybe that gets you nowhere.
Yeah.
But I feel like this stuff needs to be more visible.
Yeah. I think it needs to be more visible as well. Just today I was on Instagram and I saw, this is something that you like hear a little bit, like, oh, you pro-lifers are only pro-birth and you don't care about women. If you did, you would do this and this and this and this and this and this and this.
You would take all those children into your home.
Yes. That's literally what it said.
Yes.
And it's like, okay, these are the things that I've like kind of heard about, but today for the first time, I think I like really saw it. Like mm-hmm. somebody actually posted this on social media. Like mm-hmm. this was their view that if you actually cared, you would be fostering more children. You would be adopting more children. You would be supporting more women. You would be doing this, this, and this. And I had, and I actually kind of laughed. And somebody even commented on it. I'm pro-choice and this is stupid because it was that ridiculous of, man, there for every like one child that's born, I think there's 20 some couples waiting on a list to adopt.
Yes.
It's so difficult to adopt.
There is not a shortage of people wanting to adopt.
No. I think the foster care system is a difficult one and something that a lot of people.
It's a different situation.
And it's a different situation because those parents desire to keep their children. Mm-hmm. They desire to still have their children with them. And mm-hmm. it's a really complicated situation. Yeah. But the amount of, I mean, gosh, what is it? I think for every one abortion clinic right now, there's like almost 2.8.
Yes.
Pregnancy help centers.
Yep, I just heard that too.
Yeah. And again, it's not just pregnancy help as in we're going to get you up to delivering baby, but here in the Diocese of Sioux Falls, we have the Alpha Center. The mm-hmm. Alpha Center has ongoing programs, I think up until age 2, parenting programs, dad mentorship, father mentorship programs, mm-hmm. all of these different things. And I think that helps the pro-life movement, that helps the pro-life cause to say, again, to simply say, hey, you can do this. Mm-hmm. Yes, this is going to radically change your life. Yes, it's not what you had planned. Yes, it's going to be hard. Mm-hmm. But look, you've got a community of people surrounding you that that believe in you and yeah. believe that this child, even though it wasn't your plan, has unbelievable worth. And so we're going to support you and this child mm-hmm. to get you to a place where you're flourishing, where you're well, and that this child can be the person that God has created them to be, mm-hmm. to set the world on fire.
Yeah, yeah. And you know, there's lots of places that do a lot of things to help, but we as individuals can help too, either by volunteering or even in your parish. When you see a single mom or maybe a family that you know something about, anything, if you can talk to them, yeah. just make them that feel not alone.
Yes.
Even if it's not, okay, I'm going to buy you diapers. Maybe it is.
Yeah.
But just by including them.
Yes.
I think is really important.
Yeah. I just interviewed a young mom on Lead Them to Life, the mm-hmm. podcast that I put out weekly. And one of the things that she said, I asked her if she felt judged because she continued to go to mass all throughout her pregnancy. Mm-hmm. And I said, did you feel judged? And she was like, actually, no, people were so supportive. Mm-hmm. And I was so relieved.
Yes, no kidding.
I was so relieved
to hear
that.
Way.
It could go either way.
Yeah.
And it doesn't make it right, or it doesn't make it, you know, any better necessarily for them, but it takes away, it undoes some of that shame. And trust mm-hmm. me, most moms that are in that experience, they have enough internal shame. They don't need it from other people.
Right.
They don't need right. it from other people. So that to me is like, that's the witness of what it means as Christians, as pro-lifers, to rally around someone
yeah.
and say, we're not going to shame you here because we already know that you are experiencing that right. enough on your own. Right. You don't need us to right. add to it. Instead, we're going to accompany you. We're going to encourage you and we're going to support you and say, wow, what a gift this child is.
Yeah. Yeah.
What a gift this child is.
For sure. If you're just joining us, we're talking to Emily Leadham, who is the director of Marriage, Family, and Respect Life, talking about Respect Life Month. We have a little bit of time left, and I want to switch gears a little bit and talk about the special needs ministry
yeah.
in the diocese, because we don't really talk about them very often.
Yeah.
There's an article in the Bishop's Bulletin yeah. about them, but they cater directly to special needs kids and their families, helping them receive sacraments.
Yeah.
So can you tell us a little bit about what they do?
Yeah. Yeah. So the special needs ministry has a special little place in my heart. Maggie Price is actually a consultant hired by the diocese, and she works with parishes who maybe have children with special needs coming through their catechesis programs or through their sacramental preparation programs, et cetera, and really works with the DRE, with father, with the parents to ensure that that child has everything that they need to successfully and fruitfully, prayerfully prepare to receive the sacraments or to be invited in to be an active member of their parish. Mm-hmm. So they offer a couple different things. They offer trainings for, like I said, parish leadership, DREs, priests, that kind of thing. One of the things that I'm really excited about, hopefully we're going to be able to do it this year. It's looking a little, you know, this year is just weird.
COVID messed up everything.
That's the worst. But one of the things that we would love to do is to provide a caregiver's retreat for parents of yeah. children with special needs, because it's often exhausting. And yeah. so the special needs ministry exists to kind of support those families, to help them find community of other families, for them to also find healing. There's often some difficulties with resentment or, mm-hmm. You know, a myriad of different sufferings that,
yeah.
that kind of come with that for parents. And so to really encourage them and to say, hey, the church sees you. I had a mom one time stop in my office, a mom of a child with special needs, and it just ripped my heart out. She said, you know, the church wanted me to have this baby, and then I had this baby, and I feel like they abandoned me. Mm. I mean, it was
that's terrible.
Oh, it was horrible.
Yeah,
I just cried with her, and
you don't want them to feel that way.
No, no. And so the special needs ministry exists to help combat that feeling of loneliness. Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. perceived or real,
right?
To help combat that feeling of loneliness, and mm-hmm. to say, in the same way that we're saying, hey, we're going to support moms, mm-hmm. And that choose the gift of life and that kind of thing. We're going to support parents who accept a child with special needs.
Right.
And, you know, how can we help them?
Yeah. Cause it really is a part of our Respect Life, ministry as a church, mm-hmm. to, recognize the dignity of these children, the stresses these families go through. Yes, every family certainly goes through stresses with their children. It maybe feels a little more lonely,
yeah.
when you have a child with disabilities. So, yeah. I mean, we're called to help them as well and bring them into that Respect Life umbrella and make sure that those children especially aren't targeted,
yeah.
by abortion clinics, yeah. and so on.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean in certain countries where children with Down syndrome have mm-hmm. almost been eliminated, entirely right. eliminated because of abortion.
It's celebrated.
Yeah, one of my dear friends has Down syndrome, and I just think he's the greatest person ever. Mm-hmm. And there's this beauty that we need to be changed in order to see the gift of life of these individuals with special
yeah.
needs.
Yeah.
They already have it. There's just a freedom. If you've ever been around somebody with special needs, right? They just yep. have this freedom to be who they yep. are. It's extraordinary.
They know they're awesome.
Yeah, they know they're awesome. And they're often very faithful people.
Yeah.
Which is fascinating to me. They just have this, this deep alignment to the heart of Jesus that yeah. is unexplainable to me, but it's very clear being around various people with special needs. And so we need to be transformed to be able to see it. All yeah. life, every life.
Absolutely.
Gift.
Absolutely. All right. That's all the time we have with
that was
you,
a great conversation. We covered a lot of ground.
It was. Yeah. Thanks so much for being here
you bet,
today. Next week, we will have our lovely Bishop DeGrood in the studio. We're going to talk about his Uncle Donnie, who he has mentioned.
I was just thinking about him.
Yes, who he has mentioned several times. We're going to talk about his Uncle Donnie, and we're going to talk about how the older parishioners in our diocese can be missionary disciples and prayer warriors for the rest of us. That is it for us today. Hope you join us again next week for more Catholic Views.